The world is full of complainers. But the fact is, nothing comes with a guarantee. Now, I don't care if you're the Pope of Rome, President of the United States, or Man of the Year. Something can all go wrong. And go ahead, you know, complain, tell your problems to your neighbor, ask for help, and watch him fly. Now, in Russia, they got it mapped out so that everyone pulls for everyone else. That's the theory, anyway. But what I know about is Texas. And down here, you're on your own.
Chris Gauzer here with
Matt Howell.
Well, well, well. It's our big 700th episode extravaganza that we'll be treating like every other episode. This week on the first run, Matt and I are going to check back into the Rose Glass Hotel for more raw and earnest filmmaking. This time out, it's Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien in the lesbian crime thriller Love Lies Bleeding. Maybe we should have that Coen brothers watch this instead, maybe for a few tips. Then it's A Blast from the Past, one of the more influential horror films, Matt, of my development. It's Peter Jackson's romance splatterfest mashup Brain Dead, or how it's known here in the States, Dead Alive. There's the bicep flexing rundown of the big release on physical media, featuring your streaming and straight-to-DVD picks of the week. And then Matt and I are going to wrap the big anniversary show with our five favorite films since episode 600, which is going to be pretty 2023 heavy for me. And then at the end, we're going to have a minor announcement. So, Matt, let's go ahead and kick some ass for the Lord. Here's a clip from Love Lies Bleeding.
It's not what I'm paying you for.
I'm on my break, sir.
Come on. Come on!
If you work here, you should at least know the basics.
Line her up. You only have to be very, very gentle.
A bit more powerful than a punch, huh?
One more time, line it up.
That's it. Nice and easy.
Line them up, Matt, and knock them down. Matt was all excited about this episode. Not only because it's our 700th episode, and next week we'll be breaking off another hundo, but no, not just that. He thought we were going to be discussing the Amarynthus caudatus. We're going to spend a lot of time, right, I don't know if you know, Matt's a botanist in his spare time. So we're going to spend a lot of time discussing the plant, the flowering plant that is the Amarynthus caudatus. Unfortunately, Matt, Love Lies Bleeding is a film. I'm glad I was able to text you in time for that. And as I beat this bad joke into the ground, can you tell us what the movie's all about?
Yeah, so at the most basic high level, as not to spoil any of the craziness that is to come in this film, Lou, played by Kristen Stewart, is a gym manager who has a family of criminals. A crime family, as it were, and a bodybuilder, an aspiring bodybuilder named Jackie, comes to the gym, and Lou falls hard for her. And I don't want to get too much into it, but violence ensues, and it gets pretty crazy.
Oh, hell yeah, it does, Matt. So, Saint Maud was the first feature film directed by Rose Glass. She had directed some five shorts prior to that. And I think St. Maud, Matt, I think it flew a little bit under the radar because it came out during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people probably didn't catch it up or catch up with it. And it's a story about a nurse who is deeply religious and thinks that one of her patients may be indeed possessed. And she takes some extreme actions in that. And riveting, terrifying film with an ending that you will not soon forget. Mm-hmm. So I was really excited to catch up with Love Lies Bleeding. Matt, what are your thoughts on the film? Is it a just another big home run for Rose Glass? Or do we have a bit of the sophomore slump? What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's a very different film. I think is, you know, again, it's weird that we're getting two films about imaginary friends, but we're also getting two films about a lesbian crime spree, or at least lesbian crime adjacent films.
Sure.
With the last the Driveway Dolls, which we saw a week or two ago. It, honestly, as Chris kind of alluded to in the beginning of this, this has a very Coen Brothers feel to it, especially kind of like early nasty Coen Brothers. It has some just the kind of comedy of circumstances of people just digging themselves in deeper and deeper, and instead of taking any kind of off and outs that may be present, they just really double down and keep doubling down and doubling down until they are just completely in over their heads. And, you know, it's a wild ride. It's ultra violent. I had a good time watching this. You know, ultimately, this is Kristen Stewart's film. I mean, this is really kind of a showcase for her. But overall, I think no sophomore slump for Ms. Glass.
Yeah, and I want to make sure we don't short shrift Katie O'Brien in this as well as Jackie, who is her partner in this film. The two of them, it's weird because it's like you're rooting for them, right? It's like if they find this kind of love and maybe they're two people who can connect in this crazy world that get involved into the dark, shady side of life. It reminded me kind of like it's the Killer Joe for me of this decade, one of my favorite films from the early mid aughts with Matthew McConaughey, part of the reconnaissance. And I think one of, is it a Friedkin film? I believe it's one of Friedkin's last films. Great little movie there where McConaughey plays a sheriff who happens also to be a hitman. But this kind of had that same kind of, that was like, what is it? What do they call that? Kentucky noir? Like a, no, Kentucky Fried Noir, I think is what they called it.
I've never heard that. I've never heard that phrase before. It's a good one.
Yeah, so this is, but it has a similar vibe to that here. And I think that, again, Glass, Matt, she keeps me on the edge of my seat the entire runtime of this thing. And I love her work. I think I tweeted out the other day that she is a dangerous filmmaker and I am in love with her. Because she, for me, is a fresh and original voice. I love that she stays committed to kind of her skewed version of reality with her filmmaking.
Right.
Because we do get kind of a, I don't know, some fantastical scenes every now and particularly punctuated by the conclusion of the film. And it's, for me, a kind of a dark fairy tale firmly rooted in a pulp world. And I just love this kind of stuff. I think Stewart continues her stellar run. I think she's choosing the exact projects that are able to highlight her talents. And we're introduced, as I said, to Katie O'Brien, who I think shines and glistens just as bright as Stewart in this film. Matt, there are two people on the edge of society and they're just so desperately trying to make it to the next day, kind of let alone build their lives independently or even together. And I also want to give some praise to Jenna Malone, who I always love. And I think about her in this, and I think about her in like the Neon Demon. And just talk about range that this woman has. She is fantastic and she's great in this. Even Franco, who I basically have been underwhelmed by, Matt. I think he may have found his niche, as the slimy, semi-gangster wife beater. Hopefully he doesn't get pigeonholed into that role, but he seems to wear it well, I think. It's the bad mustache, and he's rocking a bit of a ponytail, right? Am I remembering that correctly? So, for me, Matt, it's kind of this slinky, slimy little nightmare tale that kind of kept me guessing until the end. I love the fact that I really had no idea where this film was going to go as it played out. And I was very refreshed by that.
Yeah. It's another one of those films, though, that, I mean, I can't necessarily recommend without reservation. I don't think this is going to be for everybody on just a lot of levels, but it's like if you're of a certain bent, if, you know...
And if you are bent...
Or very good if you are bent, you know, and you're prone to Chris's gushing hyperbole, then I think, yeah, I think you'll really enjoy this movie.
I do love my hyperbole. So I saw Anna Baryshnikov. I'm thinking she's got to be, right? She's got to be the daughter. Yep, and indeed she is. Mikhail Baryshnikov's daughter. All right, because she even looks like him.
Yeah, she does. It's kind of creepy.
So, yeah. And also, too, what I want to say, Clint Mansell, rock solid score. He another dude, one of my favorites, Black Swan, I think is a great score. Mm-hmm. Same thing with this one. It's more ambient and more about aesthetics and feel and emotion instead of kind of big sweeping score type moments, you know. Sure. It's more about setting the stage for everything that's about to happen. And then finally, too, Ed Harris, man. Just as our creepy boss bad guy. What is Ed Harris rocking in at? 73. Still getting it done.
Wow, good for Ed Harris, man.
So just as creepy. I think he's one of those guys that has aged well into these type of kind of slimy villain roles.
You know what it is? It's his voice. It hasn't aged. Like, he still has that commanding, like, but yet soothing at the same time voice. Like, it's it hasn't gotten gravelly or weak like sometimes it does, like Clint Eastwood and stuff like that. His voice still is still there.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, I'm sitting on Love Lies Bleeding at an A-. I may bump that up at some point the more I sit with it. I think it's my favorite film of the year so far. Not that that's high praise. I mean, we get the Dune Part 2, right?
Yeah.
But independent of that, yeah. Yep. This would be coming at number one right now. If the season ended today, Love Lies Bleeding would be the champion.
All right. It's a short season. That really tells you something about first quarter films. But
yes.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's a really fun bit of neo-pulp that is, if you're into that kind of thing, which the two of us are, you'll really enjoy it. I give it an A- as well. You know, I can see this is one of those films that one of the few that I'll end up purchasing, and it'll make it into the collection and will probably be watched every few years or so.
I feel like I'm going to get burned, though, that there's going to be a Blu-ray release of this and then eventually a 4K. I can just feel it coming. And I would also stress, Matt, because you said this might not be for everybody, I think it's important to point out, it's a tad graphic.
Yeah, just a tad.
All right. So the lesbian sex scenes can be a bit intense and a bit graphic at times. So don't fire this one up when Nani's over. Your nanny, no, whatever. What, you refer to your grandmother?
Your Nona.
I'm combining all of them at once.
I can tell, yeah.
So just keep that in mind. Don't have the kids in when you're watching this one. But independent of that, or because of that, Love Lies Bleeding is fantastico, as they say in, I want to say France?
It's usually France. You usually pick France.
Okay. Canada. But like French-Canadian Canada, like Montreal. If you had a chance to see Love Lies Bleeding, it's currently playing in theaters around you. Give us a shot. Give us a shot? What's wrong with me? Feedback at thefirstrun.com. It is late. But I got to be on top of my game, Matt. It's episode 700. It's a big episode.
It is.
Not a lot of podcasts make it this far.
Very few do. But I think it's interesting. We're just treating this as like any other show. This is like, you know, your 13th wedding anniversary. It's not like really any big thing. Maybe you go out to dinner, but it's not like a big milestone or anything like that, you know?
I guess so. Hey, you know what, though, Matt?
Look at us. Hey, look at us.
Look at us. Huh? Who would have thought?
Not me.
Not me.
Not I have an me edit. Either.
I have an edit, too, that's a little slower, but I promised Matt we would drop that in. We'd pull that as a drop. And look at us, Matt. 700 deep. I think, have I done everyone? I think I may have missed like one. Where somebody sat in with me. Maybe two? I'd have to go back.
Sat in for you? It must have been when Dave was there, because I don't remember doing that when I was co-hosting in either of my 10 years.
Typically what we tend to do, is drop in something else or rerun something. Wow.
Well, you're the linchpin. You're the anchor. This is your baby. You're the sizzle and the steak of the first run.
Thanks. feedback, firstrun.com. At the first run, I should probably clarify that. Coming out with physical media, Matt, this upcoming Tuesday, March 26th. I got to tell you, I have never seen this film. It's the only film directed by Saul Bass. Mm. And it has me intrigued. Let's take a listen.
I know the game's your business, James. You play them very well. That's why you're here. But this is a serious game. Think of the society with perfect harmony, perfect altruism and self-sacrifice,
perfect division of labor organized for preordained roles.
What is it?
Think of the building of elaborate and complex structures according to plans that they know nothing of.
They let the others go free?
Think of their ability to evolve and adapt in ways that are so beautiful, but still so unknown, and all contained in one simple form.
They wanted us.
So defenseless in the individual, so powerful in the mass.
Matt, legendary filmmaker Saul Bass. I say too, he's a graphic designer, but he's best known for his motion picture title sequences, possibly the greatest to ever do it. Well, he directed one film in his life, Phase 4, which is about desert ants suddenly forming a collective intelligence and begin to wage war on the desert inhabitants. And it's up to two scientists and a stray girl they rescue from the ants to destroy them. But the ants have other ideas. Mm. Being released in 4K by Vinegar Syndrome includes the 84-minute theatrical cut, oh, that's going to be nice and breezy, as well as the 89-minute preview version, which includes multiple soundtrack options. There's raw footage of his original ending montage sequence as well, deleted scenes and sequences. I've never seen this, Matt. They're going to pick it up, because I love his work so much that I think just aesthetically it's going to be a wonder to behold. So Phase 4 is coming out from Vinegar Syndrome. Matt, I didn't even, in perfect kind of first-run fashion, I didn't really number these properly, so I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to guess here. Let's go with this one and see how we do. Let's gamble.
Number 5?
I'm going to go with 5-Card Stud from Vinegar Syndrome as well, featuring Dean Martin and Robert Mitchum. A stranger is caught cheating in a game of 5-Card Stud, Matt, in Colorado Saloon in 1880. Van Morgan unsuccessfully tries to save the gambler's life as the other 5 players lynch the cheat. Meanwhile, a gold rush has brought a group of outsiders to the town, like gun-toting preacher Jonathan Rudd and Lily Langford with her collection of beauty lady barbers, in quotes. I wonder what that means. When 2 townspeople are murdered, Van remembers that both victims were playing in the fatal card game. Tension mounts as the killer stalks the other players until at least 2 of the principals confront each other with a showdown gunfight. The case of the 5-card stud game murders is closed. Brand new 4K restoration of that, as well as a 21-minute kind of retrospective featuring Walter Chow on the films of Henry Hathaway and more. What's one to do after that, Matt? Let's go with, let's say 4.
4!
That works. Criterion is putting out St. Omar. It follows Rama, a novelist who attends the trial of Lawrence Coley at the St. Omar criminal court to use her story to write a modern-day adaptation of the ancient myth of Medea, but things don't go as expected. Brand new 2K restoration of that. New interview with the director, Alice Diop. Conversations with her as well. Matt, are you familiar with the Bounty Hunter trilogy?
No, I'm not.
All right, well, that's number 3.
Get 3 coffins ready.
Radiance is putting out these films. Included in the set are Killer's Mission, The Ford of Death, and 8 Men to Kill. This is before he made his name in Lone Wolf and Cub. Tomosaburo Wakayama starred in the triptych of violent samurai spectacles that drawn James Bond and spaghetti westerns for their inspiration. Sign me up. High definition digital transfers of each film presented on 2 discs. They're available, Matt, on Blu-ray for the first time in the world.
Wow.
You got a commentary on one of them, some interviews, and more. This is a deluxe edition by Radiance, which has reversible sleeves, a limited edition booklet. There's only going to be 3,000 of these made that come with like a rigid box. So if you want that version, you're going to have to buy it now. If not, they'll likely be putting out a standard edition probably for about $10 cheaper later on. Where are we at? 3? So let's... Ooh, I got to skip... Oh, boy. I shouldn't have done this. All right. Because one of these is much... I have 2 options left, but I have 3 good films. So let's do this.
Get 3 coffins ready.
Number 3 is going to be The Iron Claw. Follows the story of the Von Erichs. A dynasty of wrestlers who make a great impact on the sport from the 60s to the present day. We did this one for the show. Solid film. Solid. Solid? Solid. That works. Number 2?
The 2 Utes.
Two what? What was that word?
Matt, one of the more disturbing films come out in the last few years is being released by Shudder, and that is When Evil Lurks. In a remote village, 2 brothers find a demon-infected man just about to give birth to evil itself. They decide to get rid of the man, but merely succeed in helping him to deliver the inferno. I gotta tell you, folks, I think this is on Shudder now, or if it's not, it will be soon. Oh, it's on Shudder now, right? Because we went to see it in the theater, and you were mad at me because it hit Shudder like 2 weeks later.
A few days later, it came out on Shudder.
But it is one of the more disturbing scenes in a horror film that I've seen in recent memory. And the whole thing is just deeply unsettling, exceptionally violent. So just keep that in mind when you're watching this. And then number one. There can be only one. Criterion is putting out Gus Van Sant's To Die For on Blu-ray and 4K. The 4K transfer, I should say the restoration, was approved by Gus Van Sant, as well as the director of photography, Eric Allen Edwards. Audio commentary by Van Sant, some deleted scenes, and more. There's a great little film, I guess from the early 90s, with Nicole Kidman, who plays a TV reporter that kind of becomes obsessed with a young man, and that played by Joaquin. Or as I called him back then, Joaquin Phoenix. Other stuff coming out. Out of Darkness, Matt, is being released, which we did for the show about a month or so ago. The Crow Salvation back in print, one of the Crow sequels. The Book of Clarence is being released in Blu-ray, as is Royal Hotel, directed and written by Kitty Green. Other 4K releases, Primal Fear is being released by Paramount. Burial Ground, the, oh boy, air quotes, classic horror film. This is the one, Matt, that, is it Italian or Spanish? I think it's Italian. Where there is a weird Oedipal thing in the film.
Okay.
So in order to deal with that, like the guy, like the little boy makes a move on his mom in the movie, in the horror film, they cast a little person as a boy.
Okay.
And it's very, very disconcerting the entire time. Because clearly this guy's like in his mid to late 20s, if not 30s. But he's playing like a 10-year-old.
Nice.
Classic Italian horror move. Also being released in 4K, Paint Your Wagon, Stir, North Dallas 40, and then Going South, the latest release from Cinematograph, which is the kind of, we'll say, this, I don't want to be insulting to them, but it's kind of the Criterion line of Vinegar Syndrome, where they're trying to do more important kind of classic films instead of your more genre pictures. Here straight to DVD pick of the week, Matt. I'm going to go with Dracula, Prisoner of Frankenstein. Yes, this is the Jess Franco film. Featuring the blood-sucking menace Count Dracula, who seems to have met his match in the form of the courageous Dr. Seward. But no one counted on the arrival of Dr. Frankenstein, who carts along his monster and devises a plan to bring the Count back to life, Matt, for his own insidious means. Soon the countryside is overrun with seductive vampire vixens. It is a Franco film. A bloodthirsty werewolf, leering servants, and two horror titans at each other's throats. It's another wild, colorful, Euro-flavored creature feature from director Jesus Franco, who also did, of course, Rites of Frankenstein and then Vampiros Lesbos, also known as The Screaming Dead and Dracula vs. Frankenstein. You get a brand new 4K restoration of that, Matt, as well as some new interviews, the original Spanish opening credit sequence, and a deleted scene from the English language version. Matt, what should we be streaming this week?
So, available for, I can't remember if I recommended this. I might have already, but I don't think I have. But if you would like to watch Chris's not best effects winner, Napoleon, is available on Apple Plus for your streaming pleasure.
Dare you. But it's not the expanded version.
It's not the expanded version, no.
That's what I'm waiting for.
It's not out yet. But I mean, if you haven't seen it yet, you should watch the theatrical cut, so then you can see, you know, you can really appreciate the 4-hour marathon that's coming after with the expanded cut.
I see. I worry about that because people watch that and go, oh, this isn't good. Why would I want to watch another hour and a half of this movie? Because you remember a lot of times in Ridley Scott's films, the director's cuts, like Kingdom of Heaven, you know, the longer versions are better.
Yeah.
So think about that before you make your decision on watching Napoleon. Though I don't mean to undercut you, Matt. Your picks are always so delicious. Matt, I want to spend a minute and talk about a couple trailers that just dropped that are burning the internet alive here. Burn them up. Everybody's all excited about it. First off, what do you want to do first? Crow or Alien Romulus?
Let's end on a high note, so let's go with the Crow first.
Oh, saucy. What do you? So Matt did not care for the 90s throwback rock and roll action horror film that is The Crow, huh?
No, so the original Crow with Brandon Lee is cheesy. Mm. It's pretty stupid. But it has its kind of like a D-list 90s charm to it. And it's got this weird, you know, goth industrial vibe. And it's kind of its own thing, right? And, you know, especially as Brandon Lee's final movie, the one that he was unfortunately killed on while acting in it. It has like a certain mystique to it. This new one with Alexander Skarsgård. Bill Skarsgård, excuse me.
It's Billy.
Wrong Skarsgård.
But he's playing Eric Draven, so it's like a reboot.
It is. I think I saw somebody describe it as like the first one was like a muscled out killer version of Robert Smith, whereas this one looks like a sound like MGK in his SoundCloud era. This guy looks like something that would be what like a somebody out in the Midwest would consider like an edgy, scary,
like a Machine Gun Kelly, like a really bad white rapper.
Yeah, that's what I said. MGK, yeah, Machine Gun.
Oh, that was. I'm sorry, I don't know. I'm not hip with the kids' lingo.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not gonna say all those syllables. I'm just gonna put MGK out there.
I don't like too that they kind of twist things up a little bit. Like, wasn't Draven's thing like, wasn't he like a like almost like an activist too for like fair housing and stuff? And that one of the reasons why he got killed was because he was here. He's just happens to be there because his girl saw something bad happen.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a supernatural angle to the bad guys in the first film, right? But there seems to be here.
A little bit of a supernatural angle. Like the woman in the original film is supposed to be like a witch. She's kind of, but not like
it's been a long time
superpowers or anything like that. Like, you know, she can, you know, mystical mumbo jumbo kind of stuff, you know? But I tell you what, it's been a really, really long time since I read the graphic novel by James O'Barr. I can't even tell you how faithful either one of these I can tell. Well, I'm almost 100% positive that this new one is nowhere near close to the actual source material, but I don't remember how faithful the 90s version was either.
Yeah, I haven't read the original, so I couldn't say. And I don't think I have seen The Crow since it came out.
Really?
It's been a long... Maybe I watched it on VHS after it was, you know, hit home video, but it's been a very long time. And it is being released in 4K on May 7th.
Is it? It's a treat how hokey it is. You might enjoy it.
Yeah. I think I'd pick it up. I remember really liking it at the time. Mm-hmm. So I hope that it's good. When is the new one coming out? Let's see here. I'm assuming it's going to correspond with the release of the new version. That's usually how that works. So they want to push that out. What's the release date? June 7th. So a month ahead of time. I guess you want to build up some head of steam there. But I was not really overly impressed with it. I wanted to give it some time because when it comes to reboots and remakes, I know that you get kind of tiresome and it's like, come up with an original idea, all right? But if you give me something fresh and new, I'm open to it.
Sure.
I'm always curious what you know. I've always said, and I think this is general thought for a lot of people, is if you're going to remake something that's bad and make it good.
Right.
Right? But still, it's been a long time. The Crow sequels, I think we were straight to DVD for those, there were three sequels, right? But they were all straight to DVD films.
Yeah, I don't think I saw a single one of them.
Neither did I.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. There's just something about just the sheer aesthetics of this thing. It looks hyper violent. It looks like it's particularly grisly at times from that trailer. But that's not going to be enough for me. I'm going to need a little bit of camp, I think, for this. Just like Matt said, maybe a little hokey winking at times. I don't know. I don't know if I want a super dark, ultra-violent Crow. I got John Wick. I have that in other options.
Yeah. Well, see, the problem is it looks like a kind of like an immature teenager's idea of what would be ultra-dark and violent and cool.
Yes.
And it doesn't. Yes. And it's not at all.
Exactly right. It's exactly right. All right, so then, Matt, what about Alien Romulus? What's going on there?
Whew, there's not much for us to give this to, but I really like how Feedy is staying true to form. And his first he gave us a tree, then he gave us a turkey baser, and he's really hyping up the oral rape aspect of how the aliens breed in a very quick flash cut. But yeah, I mean, otherwise very cool atmosphere. You know, you get what looks like a quick flash of like six or seven facehungers coming after a character. You know what? There's not a whole lot to be super excited for here, but at the same time, it doesn't look bad. So I'm on board so far. Give me more, Feedy, and let's see what you got.
Yeah, I'm... I'm on the fence on this one.
Okay.
So, I think it's interesting when you brought up some of the stuff. I think it was Danielle Ryan, who I follow on Twitter, who I enjoy a lot. She expressed some concerns with this film because the entire Alien franchise mostly is basically a rape allegory.
Mm-hmm.
And Alvarez, I don't think, has exactly handled that well, given mm-hmm. the Don't Breathe film.
Sure.
And then I think that his Elizabeth Salander film, The Girl Who Kicked a Hornet's Nest, is an atrocious film.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I put that on studio interference.
Sure.
I'm not sure. Because I still say that I absolutely adore his Evil Dead reboot, re-sequel thing, whatever that thing is.
Right.
So you're right. There's not a lot here to go on. Lots of people running. Lots of facehuggers darting around hallways and stuff.
Blood splatters, screams.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
So, and this takes a place, it's between the first and the second film.
Okay. I don't know.
It takes place between two films. I don't know if it's a few months after the first one.
Okay.
But they just take place between the two of them.
Okay.
And I'm kind of curious. I don't know. I will say I was able to get my hands on all three of the Cameron 4Ks. I guess there was an issue with that. Amazon ran out.
No.
Man. And they get some jackholes on eBay, selling them for like hundreds of dollars each.
Right.
And I hope something horrible happens to you. Nothing permanent. But for scalpers like that, I have no respect for you as human beings whatsoever.
Right.
And it drives me nuts. Regardless, I can't wait. I'm going to pop in that Aliens in the next week, I think, and watch it and see how it looks. Because I know I'm concerned about his grain removal, his waxiness with that. But I think also, too, is that he AI'd it. That's what it is he feeds his films through this algorithm that is supposed to kind of clean them up a bit and provide a more pristine image that I'm a little concerned about. So I'll try and report back on maybe one of those a week. And I still have never seen The Abyss, so I'm really looking forward to that. I assume that I should start with the director's cut on that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because I think the director's cut has a bunch of stuff at the end that I think really helps the film, or at least gives you a different perspective.
Yeah, I've never seen it. So, but Romulus, cautiously optimistic. Lots of running. So I hope those people have their cardio.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that good? Are we good?
That's good. Now I'm kind of bummed out. Like, I didn't leap to trying to get these 4Ks, and now I'm not going to be able to get any for God knows how long until they restock.
You know what? I think The True Lies is available now. You can order it, and it's going to ship like in 2 to 3 weeks.
Sure.
It's going to be, they'll be around. That they're not going to go anywhere. I wouldn't worry too much about that. It's, in fact, let me see. Is the Aliens? Ooh, no. Aliens 1 is not currently on Amazon.
Right. That's what I mean. You can't even like tag it. Like, it's just not there.
Wow. Sorry, buddy. Guess you should have jumped on it.
I guess so. But you know what? I'll live. You know, it'll come back around at some point.
Oh, it'll be out again. That's part of the issue now, because Best Buy doesn't carry anything anymore.
Right.
Like that. You can't pop in there. Walmart's got a very limited selection. Even then, they don't have a lot of 4Ks.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy over here, Shelby at Viper Video, I said, Shelby, order them for me. Sure enough, I didn't have them the day they came out. I had them the next day.
Okay.
But I got them.
Yeah. Well, that's good for you, because we have nothing like that in the massive suburb that is Connecticut. So.
Mm-hmm. You know what else I got, too? I'll tell you right now. I don't know if you saw this on Twitter. I'm going to show it to Matt on the video, though people won't really be able to see it.
Ooh, wow, look at that. Look at you.
I finally pulled the trigger. I had a good year for my real job. So I, first printing of the novelization of The Thing.
Yeah.
And it's in good condition. A lot of them are all in acceptable condition.
Right, okay.
But this one is good. Now, it's got a lot of yellowing on the pages.
Right.
But the book itself is in reasonably good. I mean, it looks like it's been read, and it looks like it's a book that's, 40 years old?
Yeah.
But it's still, I think, in fantastic shape. And I was really happy with the price I got for it. I'll tell you this, it was well under three digits. Well under.
Okay. Well, good. Good. I'm glad you didn't pay it through the nose for it, and you're happy with it.
I've been wanting this for a very long time, because it has a different, I think there's a little more of an ending, and you find out what actually happens to Bennings.
Oh, okay.
You know, in the film, he they find his glasses,
right,
then his charred remains potentially, or something's charred remains,
mm-hmm.
because this is based on the original screenplay of the thing.
Okay.
And you actually find out what happens to him. So I'm really excited. I think about two. It's also written by Alan Dean Foster. Is the novelization of Alien.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about that. And then also he did Escape from New York.
Okay.
Which is supposed to be really good too. There's supposed to be a lot of other plot points in that were dropped from the film that make it a little interesting.
Okay. So, interesting. Yeah, I go to a lot of like used book sales and stuff, so I'll keep an eye out for you just to see if anything.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Even if I find any kind of adaptions like that, even if they're not the ones that you rent off, if they're like, you know, a few bucks, I'll buy them, send them out to you.
Yeah, pretty much any 80s horror or science fiction like novelizations, you'd probably be, that'd be cool. Thanks, bro.
No problem.
Matt, let's talk about Brain Dead or Dead Alive, one of my favorite films growing up that got me into kind of the whole splatter gore horror stuff. I probably haven't seen this since the 90s when I first was able to get my hot little hands on that DVD as a kid. So I'm going to find out if that held up.
Is that all you have to say?
Look, I'm really sorry about the zoo, Paquita. It's just Mum. She's, you know...
We go out again? To a movie?
Look, I'd like to. But it's not... It's just not possible.
Not possible? But we are romantically entangled.
Entangled? Oh, look. Look at it. I don't know what you're thinking, but, I just can't see you anymore.
Matt. Brain Dead is the romantic drama there that you heard that you've been waiting your whole life for.
Mm-hmm.
I got done watching this, and of course, again, known as Dead Alive here in North America, and I felt cheated. I felt cheated because this is what happened after this film. Peter Jackson, that Peter Jackson makes Heavenly Creatures, great little film. I love Heavenly Creatures, though I haven't seen that probably in 20, 30 years. Frighteners, great stuff. I love the Frighteners as well. Michael J. Fox, right? And then Lord of the Rings and his King Kong film, which I will confess kind of runs out of gas.
Right.
But that segment on Monster Island or Skull Island is terrifying and fantastic. And as close as we get, I think, to the Peter Jackson that I love, whose heart I thought at some point may have been in horror, but has since passed it by. So from that, he did The Lovely Bones, which is underwhelming, I think. And then the Hobbit films, which just are too long and dull.
Yeah. Yeah.
And checkered CGI. And he hasn't done anything since. At least not directed anything since.
Interesting.
And, let me clarify. He did do a round of documentaries. He did They Shall Not Grow Old.
Right, yep.
And then two Beatles films, The Beatles Get Back and then The Beatles Get Back, The Rooftop Concert.
Right.
That's basically what he's been doing. And I feel cheated, Matt. Imagine the additional horror films we may have seen through the years with what, for me, to this day, after revisiting it, is still a classic, and that is Brain Dead. What about you? What's your experience with Brain Dead? When did you first see it?
This week when I watched it for this show.
Seriously? You've never seen it?
I've never seen it, no.
Were you aware of it?
Yeah, I was aware of it. It's one of those things I had meant to catch up with, like that and like Bad Taste and things like that. And I just never did. I just never got around to it kind of thing. So I watched this as a man in his mid-40s for the first time. and I can tell you this. I think if I had seen this when I was, you know, however old I was when this came out in 1992, like, you know, 12, 13 years old, I think I would have really loved this film, and I think I would have had a real affection for it.
Mm-hmm.
But as seeing it for the first time as somebody, as an adult, there are things that I really like about this. I dare say even love. And that's all the horror elements, the kills, the gore, just stuff is just like super creative. And even with the micro budget, like it looks really good. And then even when it looks hokey, its charms are, it like sells it. It makes it so good. The problem is when that stuff's not happening, it's boring as fuck. Like it is. It is the whole.
Yeah, but how much you have of that? It's probably 5-10 minutes of the film's runtime.
I feel like it was a lot more than I would have expected. Either that or because it was just so slow, and like it was just, it just dragged. So it, like, it seemed like it was for a like a long part of the film, and I really just wanted to get to, you know, Pete, you're really you know, knocking me out of the park here with these kills and all this stuff and how creative and good this stuff is. I don't want to talk about, like, please don't bring this love, like, you know, this awkward guy trying to find true love part. I don't care about that part. Just give me the zombies killing people and I'll be fine. And I honestly had a good time with it. I think there's much more here to love than not. It's just, that's my one complaint, is that when the killings are not happening, it drags a bit.
All right, I don't know what Matt's talking about. If I even grant your ridiculous
here we go
presentation, sure. With this, you're talking about out of a 94 minute runtime, if you get the, is it 94 minutes or 104 minutes, the full version? Yeah, 104 minutes, I think, with the full uncut version.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking 10 minutes, maybe, right, well, 15.
That's 10% of the runtime right there.
But outside of that, you're in for some of the most maniacal, insane, kind of zombie, gross splatter horror stuff you have ever seen, I think. It's just a beautiful piece of just madcap madness. It is so over the top, Matt, that it almost slips into a parody of itself over and over again. But right before it tips over, it seems to pull itself back for me. And it is like when his mom shows up for the final time, It's like almost something out of like Pink Floyd's The Wall kind of, you know, the film. It is just insane. And at no point, there are segments in this film that I had totally forgotten about. And I was just watching this the whole time with the biggest grin on my face. I'm so happy that it held up for me. Just ultra violent, ultra gory, but it's so over the top. It's not one of those where it's not like a Gaspar Noé film, right? Where it's so realistic that you're like deeply disturbed, or even what's the one we just talked about? The what lies within, or evil lies? What is it?
Where evil lurks.
Where evil lurks. Like, yeah. That one.
That's
brutal. Is. It's so disturbing because everything is taken so darkly and deathly serious.
Mm-hmm.
Here, clearly everybody's having a blast when the priest shows up. Which you can stay tuned for the stinger for this week. But I mean, just one thing after another. It's insane. And it's just as much fun as I remembered it, Matt. Really. I don't know. I give, I guess, a pass to the acting chops of Timothy Balm and Deanna Penelover as our star-crossed love couple here, who are romantically... what do they say? We are romantically entwined, or...
Oh, yeah. What does she say?
I know, it's not like I just played it a minute ago.
Yeah. Romantically involved. Entangled. That's it. Yes, that's right. Entangled.
Boy, unfortunately for her. It's just crazy fun stuff, Matt. And this is hard to track down.
Yeah.
I think this was available on Blu-ray as an import. You can buy it. I think it's German or Spanish. I can't remember. But you can get that off of Amazon for about $30.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the uncut version, which is the version you want to see. You do not want to cheat yourself out of any of this insane gore stuff. You don't. You're going to be marveled by stuff. You're going to be like, well, how did they, why would you, oh, that's nuts. Like, you're going to be saying that over and over again while you're watching this thing. So, yeah, you can track it down. And I'm sure there's some other alternative ways you could find it as well.
Yeah. Well, it is available for, you can rent it on Amazon for like $4 if you just want to.
Oh, well, there you go.
It. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. And I think it's available streaming straight on YouTube if you search for it the right way, too.
Okay, all right.
So, but yeah, Dead Alive / Brain Dead, Matt. It's getting an A from me. It's just wonderful, wonderful stuff. I love it still.
Yeah.
I want a 4K of this thing with a whole bunch of special features. Supposedly, Jackson said, like, 2 years ago, that he was, 2 or 3 years ago, he was back to some of his old, he's going to go back to his old films, clean them up, and put out some nice packages of them. Which would lead us to right about now.
Right.
So I'm hoping that we'll be hearing something at some point this year.
Right. Okay. Well, fingers crossed for you, Chris. Yeah, I'm going to give this thing an A-. I think, there's enough here that I really enjoyed. And besides maybe my nitpicky criticisms aside, I think it's a lot of fun. It is a fun movie.
Good for you. All right. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm partly... I can't decide if I'm disappointed you hadn't seen it previously or mm-hmm. excited that I was able to bring it to you
right.
to experience for the first time. So I'll go with the latter.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very generous of you.
Have you seen One Cut of the Dead?
Of course not, Chris. We said that that's God what... When we put the chairs on the table and turn on the off the lights on this show, whenever that ends up being, that's going to be what we talk... That's going to be the last thing we go out on, is me and my thoughts on One Cut of the Dead when we're like 65 years old.
All right. They're wheeling me out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
Fine. Even if I watch it and you ask me how it is, I'm not going to talk about it on the show until the last episode.
That's rude. If you had a chance to see Brain Dead, Dead Alive, have you seen this classic? Just an email at feedback@thefirstrun.com. It's out there. You can find it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Matt, let's close up the big show. I spent a few minutes talking about our five favorite films since episode 600, which made me sad for how weak the years for the most part have been mm-hmm. since episode 600.
Yeah.
Here's one that just barely didn't make the cut for me. This was tough. In fact, you asked me in a week, maybe it's my number five.
You think you could pull some strings and find a police report on someone for me?
Oh, Fletch. No way. Way too big an ask.
It'd just be a real shame if Daphne found out that you defiled Clara Snow in the supply closet all those years ago. I mean, especially in today's climate, you were her boss.
First of all, it wasn't the supply closet. It was the copy room. And it was a bilateral defiling. Are you really trying to blackmail me?
Kinda.
You wouldn't.
No, you're probably right. On the other hand, I am still under suspicion for murder.
Whose police report?
Owen Tasserly. Write it down, you old lush. He was arrested a while back for something, I don't know what, but I think he might be the actual murderer.
I'll see what I can do.
Thank you.
But hey, if you did kill that girl, do the right thing and give me an exclusive.
So, Matt, that is a clip from Confess Fletch from Greg Mottola featuring John Hamm taking over Chevy Chase as Fletch. I think another film I think may have been potentially impacted by the pandemic, though, on the downside of things for the most part. Hilarious film that I think the studio totally butchered, gave like no promotion for whatsoever. I bought it digitally for $5 a couple years ago or two years ago or something because I didn't think it was ever going to get a physical media release. They really did this film dirty. It is now available on Blu-ray. You can check it out. I think it's great. It's got mostly middling reviews, but I think it's very funny, very smart, and Hamm is perfect for this role. So Confess Fletch is an honorable mention for me right outside my five. What about you? Would it be you enjoyed it, right?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't think it would have sniffed anywhere of this list. I wouldn't even put it on my honorable mentions. I tried to do a cutoff where either really high B plus or like A minus. I enjoyed the film, but you know, I don't think I'd put it in like one of my favorites.
Fair enough. All right, I'll go first, Matt. I'll give you the ultimate number one.
Ooh.
My number five, then, I guess I'm gonna do this. I don't know. I'm gonna go with a film from last year. There are a few films from last year on my list, and it's Emma Seligman's Bottoms, the generational defining comedy featuring, as I said before, featuring Rachel Sennett and Ayo Edebiri about two lesbians in high school who are what? They're basically form a club to hopefully meet some girls, a fight club, I should say,
yeah.
And things go crazy from there. But it is so ridiculously over the top and endlessly funny. And it's one of those films, too, where it has like gags in every scene that are not part of the actual main scene that's happening. Lots of little stuff filled with golden comedic moments and a film, one of the few films in the last few years that I laughed my butt off, where I almost cried. I was laughing so hard. I really enjoyed Bottoms.
Mm.
So it's my number five.
All right. Yeah, I was looking at this list. I was going back and look. And I was like, man, a lot of the stuff that was good is like super recent. Like
yeah.
that was pretty crazy. All right. So then my number five is my affection pick. I've mentioned it many, many times, but I had zero expectations for Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was going to be good at all, and I was going to go see it prepared to be sad. So imagine my surprise when not only was it good, but it was actually quite delightful. About Chris Pine leading a ragtag band of adventurers to win back the love of his daughter and, you know, save the world along the way. The filmmakers absolutely understand Dungeons and Dragons, all of the little nods to the ridiculousness of campaigns, even right down to, you know, rolling 20, not 20s and ones, and even just the stuff like with, you know, Reggie Jean, like just going straight off the map, just over obstacles as you move him through stuff. It's just all the little touches was just fantastic. So it's my number five.
I love too that the 80s cartoon versions of the characters show up at one point as well.
Yeah.
And that is a great pick, Matt. My number four then is from 2022, and that's Brett Morgan's documentary, Moon Age Daydream, working through the life of David Bowie. Missing some key moments, I think, which is one of the few knocks I have for it. But as the Bowie... aficionado is not the right term. What's a more disturbing term for a fan? Sycophant? That might be good.
Yeah.
I don't want to make myself too pathetic.
Obsessive?
Ooh, I don't know. Either way, I love Moon Age Daydream, and I have the Criterion 4K release, which is absolutely gorgeous. And I've watched that thing probably two or three times now. I bought it three times already. I bought it the Blu-ray when it came out. Then I bought the digital copy because I wanted to be able to have it like on my phone or whatever the case would be. If I ever want to just listen to it or watch it, you know, there's certain films and things that I like to have on in the background. The two big ones, of course, are Rope and Glengarry Glen Ross. And then this is, I started tracking, Matt. I'm on Letterboxd now. I'm gonna track every film this year on Letterboxd as I go. Okay. And I've already watched Glengarry twice and Rope twice. In fact, I'm halfway through Rope again. And what it is, it's a work film. I'll have, like, if I'm doing some, like, non-thinking, like, work, artsy kind of work, I just put it on in the background.
Interesting.
And especially Glengarry and Rope, I've seen so many times, I can recite them, which is kind of part of the fun. Moon Age Daydream is another one, too, because there's so much music, lots of great stuff in it. I love all the interviews. I get a little emotional every time because I'm such an obsessive, as Matt puts it. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow, Matt, before this comes, so by the, when this comes out, this will have been yesterday. There is some announcement about Ziggy Stardust, and I don't know what.
Oh.
I think it's going to be a new box set.
Okay.
Compiling all the stuff from the Ziggy area. They did that with Hunky Dory last year with the Divine Symmetry set.
Mm-hmm.
This year, they're putting out on Record Store Day the original version of Rise and Fall Ziggy Stardust on vinyl that includes the original running track listing, which drops like three of the songs and puts three other ones on it.
Okay.
And the original version would have been a mistake. The one album you know is so much better, but it's a cool little curio. I've had it as a playlist in my iTunes, you know, forever.
Yeah.
Because I already knew what that was, but still, I'm excited to actually be able to listen to it. Regardless, Moon Age Daydream, Matt, is my four. Love, and he won a Grammy for best documentary feature or best musical, I think what it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I the only question for me is where that film would appear on your list. So anyway, my number four then.
Well, four is good.
Yeah, four is good. So my number four then is a divisive film. Not a lot of people like this film. I don't even think my co-host necessarily liked this film.
Ooh.
But I can tell you that while I was watching this, I had a physical reaction to this film that I haven't had ever. Like I can't remember the last time it happened, but this is the ultra low budget, super weird, barely any story, air quote horror film, Skinamarink, which is about two small children who wake up one day, their parents are gone, they can't get out of their house, they don't know what to do, so they just sit around, make a fort, and watch cartoons and work through the food in the house. Well, there's something creepy in that house, and goddamn, if that thing did not give me anxiety while I'm watching this, straining to see what is in that fuzzy corner and this awful film grain. Is there something there? Oh man, it is a scary movie. I Man, I really adore that film. I need to get a copy and watch it and see if it still works at home.
I know
you don't like it. I mean, you know, here's the thing.
I didn't like it per se. I just it didn't really work for me. I don't know.
That's fine. I mean, we just heard you gush about David Bowie for the past 10 minutes.
Yeah. Come upstairs. Matt, my number three then. Now, I've been thinking about this since we did our top 10 of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually I've already started to reconsider my thought process on this.
Interesting. Okay.
I said I might, and I've been leaning towards the Howl camp on this. And right now, my number three is Glazer's Zone of Interest.
Mm.
Now, favorite seems like a weird thing to say about this film.
Yeah.
But it's so powerful and it impacted me so deeply.
Yeah.
It's just one of those cinematic moments of the last few years since episode 600 that really impacted me. And I think that needs to be paid attention to. Don't get me wrong. I desperately prayed that Portrait of a Lady on Fire was from 600 on. Unfortunately, it was like 580 something, so it didn't make the cut.
It's too bad.
That's what I found out, is that a lot of the films that when I first started doing this, I started scrambling, writing some notes down, like some titles, and I looked them up, and they were all before 600.
Yeah.
So, Zone of Interest right now is my number three. And then, I don't know if you read it, Matt. I read Peter Rutland's review on CNN Opinion about Zone of Interest. And it is embarrassing, that review. It is. I tweeted it out, and I tweeted out with a quote tweet with, like, the ridiculous review is going to turn me into a video essayist. I mean, it's so misguided and misunderstands the film. It's shocking and it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And it made me again want to think about and revisit this film and watch it again. So Zone of Interest right now is my three.
All right. So my number three then is the swan song of the greatest action franchise of the past 10, 15 years, which is John Wick Part 4. I adore the John Wick films. I think there's not really a weak one in the bunch. They are all very entertaining. They brought a new style of action, for better or worse, to the action cinema landscape. But you can't beat the original. And I think it goes on a high note. I think it's a good an example of just creative, you know, thought process and a different way of doing action films that, you know, is now baked into the kind of cinematic language. And I just got to give it some love.
No, that's a good pick, Matt. I'm surprised. I was kind of waiting to hear like Black Adam or something. Maybe that's coming up.
Amsterdam? Spoil number one. Don't spoil
Remember
number
Amsterdam?
One. Yeah, or Babylon.
There's parts of Babylon that I really like.
Okay, parts in a like 3.5 hour movie.
You know what I was thinking about too that I want to revisit is that Hellraiser film on Hulu.
I do kind of want to watch that again. Yeah,
I still got to watch my 4K box set of the first four films from Arrow. Nice, I got to crack that sucker open. So okay, so where am I? Two? We're at two. Wow, we're at two. It's right now. I think it's. Oh, wait a minute. Did I just screw up majorly? Hold on, Matt. I may have a major problem on my hands.
Major problem.
Oh, go see again. I was wrong. 571, Malignant.
Oh, okay.
571. God damn it. Things have stunk for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it's Killers of the Flower Moon. Marty's film with, that's what I said before. I'm starting to go vacillate. That Zone of Interest may have been my favorite film of 2023.
Yeah.
Kills the Flower Moon, though, still sitting at number two, but it's getting tighter, Matt. That space between them is now gossamer thin for me.
Sure.
But Lily Gladstone's earth-shattering performance. Somebody, too, said the other day how could she possibly be the winner? She's barely in the film. She's only in for like 10, 20 minutes. Her presence permeates that entire film. She's in the whole thing at every shot. And just like, too, one of the issues this guy had in Zone of Interest, his big complaint, Matt, is that there's no Jews in the film. There are Jewish people. Man, I hit that J really hard, didn't I?
Real hard, yeah.
There are Jewish people in that film. In every scene.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
If you're paying attention, they're in every scene.
Right.
And it's just, whatever. It's so, it's a piece of propaganda is what that review is what it is. And it's infuriating to me. Killers of the Flower Moon, though, Chris, that's what we're talking about. Number two, again, Gladstone, Leo, Marty, De Niro, you know, for every bad comedy he does, he comes back up and says, oh, yeah, no, this still is one of the best to ever live, best to ever do it. So Killers of the Flower Moon is currently my number two.
All right. Well, my number two then is Zone of Interest. I think Chris is correct. It's one of these films where I struggle to say that I enjoyed myself, but it is a seminal moment in film just from an artistic perspective with the use of sound and everything that's the focus of this film, and as well as the kind of just matter-of-fact approach they take to it. And it is just something that I think I would... It's upsetting. I probably still would end up buying this, but it's not something I would be rushing myself out to buy. And I think out of all the films on my list that could have, that are on here or could have been on here, I think this is by far the best film, but it's only number two just because I'm not going to be saying, you know what, I should sit down and watch A Zone of Interest. I'm in the mood. Like, that's, I can't ever see that happening very often.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I'm really hoping for a really nice 4K set of that thing. Crossing my fingers for a Criterion release. I can't remember. Does Neon done Criterion? Oh, yeah. Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Yeah, so hopefully we'll get a really nice, well-done physical edition of that. But speaking of films that are highly watchable, even though they may be super long, my number one's going to be John Wick Chapter 4.
Oh, nice.
I think everything ties up perfectly in a cute little bow. If they want to do another film, A, I don't see how. B, I don't know if they should. The just one over-the-top escalating action sequence after another, which of course ends with a classic simple duel.
Right.
And just some fantastic stunt work. Again, if I appreciate the Oscars giving what an honorary kind of wink and a thumbs up to the stunts this year. But the fact that there still isn't a stunts category blows my mind. Hopefully, right. Maybe we're just a little more closer now. We certainly should be. But some fantastic work. And two, I was rewatching Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. Mm-hmm. I'd gotten that on 4K recently. Again, still not great. Good, not great. Not as good as Fallout. Certainly not as good as Ghost Protocol. But that scene, again, when they're driving in the circle in Rome there, right? That they did so much better in John Wick Chapter 4. Sadly, it's what I think. Whenever I see that scene, I'm like, oh, I got to watch Chapter 4 again. But great stuff. So Wick's my number four. And like Matt said, it's a film you can revisit over and over again.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's a completely valid. And I'm glad you went with a film that we know, you know, is not maybe a capital F film, but it is fun. You know, and it's one that we're going to watch over and over again.
Yep.
So then my number one then is the middle entry and what I'm hoping will stick the landing on maybe a great animated trilogy in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I loved the first one. I loved this one with the extension of focusing a lot of the story on Gwen and not necessarily just on Peter or Miles. And I think I'm really excited and curious to see how they end this one. And I hope it's exciting, but they haven't let me down so far.
Nice. Any honorable mentions for you?
Yeah. So I think my very close number six that didn't quite make the list was David Fincher's latest with The Killer. I really enjoyed that film. Top Gun Maverick, I think, is still one of the best, or at least one of the most fun action movie experiences I've had in a while. I was had very low expectations, and I was pleasantly surprised with it. You know, and then of course there's just kind of the kind of rundown Oppenheimer, How to Blow Up a Pipeline. Lots of solid, though recent, like you know, cinema type films that are really good.
Yeah, and stuff that Matt didn't mention that was honorable mentions from me. The Banshees of Inisherin, which was, I think, my favorite film from last year. I just picked it up on Blu-ray about a month and a half ago because it was on sale for like $8.
Right.
Watcher, a great little horror film that came out. Was it last year?
I think it might have been the year before.
Have to be, because we'd only be 100 episodes deep at that point.
Right.
RRR, which was on Netflix, was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. Decision to Leave. mm-hmm. which I liked a lot, is on here. Tar, I think Blanchett is really good in that film. Though, that's on sale for $5 right now on iTunes, and Groove is having a big sale on 3 4Ks for $45, which is part of that set. I was going to pull the trigger on a couple of them. Like, I wanted to get The Fugitive, and then I was even spying Training Day, potentially, because I only had that on DVD, though I don't know, a big fan of the film. I love Denzel in it.
Yeah.
But The Fugitive already sold out, and I don't think I'm going to pull the trigger on anything else, because that would have been the linchpin for that. What else? Knives Out 2. I know people don't like it as much, but I think it's great. Weird, the Al Yankovic story, I had a lot of fun with. That's actually getting a 4K release, I think, in a month or two. Poor Things, Yorgos is the most recent film. Anatomy of a Fall, I'd throw in there as well. Everything Everywhere All at Once as well. And then finally, The Menu, which is currently on Max. If you haven't seen it, Ralph Fiennes and Anya Taylor-Joy, I should say. I was really surprised by how much I loved The Menu, and I've been wanting to revisit that one too.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. Those have been the five favorite films and some honorable mentions of the last 2 years. All right, so we do 52 episodes a year, roughly. So I think actually 51 or 50 every now and then we run into an issue.
Sure.
So, but those are our five favorite films since episode 600. And what are your favorites? Shoot us an email at feedback@thefirstrun.com. Matt, let's wrap the show up and talk a little bit about what's coming up in the future. So, Matt, what's going to be here next week? What are we seeing?
So we're going to see the latest in the Ghostbuster franchise, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And then we have on the list, we intended to watch Roadhouse, the Jake Gyllenhaal straight to Amazon streaming remake of the Patrick Swayze air quotes classic.
Directed by Doug Liman, Swingers, Born Identity, Edge of Tomorrow, or Live Repeat, Live Die Repeat, whatever. So yeah, there's that. But here's the thing. And we're supposed to be doing, I think we're going to do our 2024 summer bracket, which we haven't done in a long time.
Wow, okay.
So I thought that might be fun to do. I want to bring that back, and I wanted to bring back to our maybe the Rotten Tomatoes game. We haven't done that in a couple of years either, where we guess the score of some of the big films. We usually do that in the second half of the year.
Yeah.
For the second half. We're going to make a couple changes on the show as well. Last summer, we dropped the second film for the summer. I think we're going to just do that permanently now. Mm-hmm. I am going to be 49 this year.
Wow.
All right. So I've been basically, I feel like I'm staring death in the face at this point due to my old age. And I did a count, Matt.
Yeah.
I own 256 films that I have not watched.
Holy shit, Chris.
And I want to watch them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start doing that.
Wow.
And I also want to draw again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. People may not know this. I have a degree in illustration.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been wanting to draw and paint again for a very long time. And as Matt said earlier or before we started recording, time is at a premium. And I want to be able to do some of those things, but I don't want to give up the show because I love it so much. And I love talking to Matt every week about movies. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to drop the second film as a consistent thing every week.
Yeah.
If something comes that's big that we want to talk about, we're going to do it.
Right.
All right. So like we're going to do Roadhouse next week. Right now for June 14th, we have Ballerina and Hitman loaded up. July 12th episode, Maxine and Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if something hits, we're going to do it.
Right.
But it's going to be infrequent going forward. But that's it. Right now, that's kind of the only change. Everything else is going to roll as it's been going. So you won't really see that big a change. In fact, during Dave's tenure, we dropped the second film entirely as well.
Okay.
After like the first 6 months because he was, you know, being a little bitch boy about it. So. But that's it. That's it. And we're also going to try and do more things. Like, I want to watch these films. So yeah. I want to start doing The Great Unwatched. I'll be bringing that back, which I may make a YouTube exclusive type thing. You have to check it out there. I don't know. I have other things I'd like to do for the show as well. And hopefully this will give me the time to do it. Maybe we can get Matt to do his little side thing too, which is the stuff that he has to decide if he wants to upgrade or not. Right?
Yeah. Upgrade or jettison.
So there you go. Mm-hmm. So that's it. So we're not going away. We love you very much. Everybody who's been with us for 700 episodes or just two, we love you very much. And we appreciate your support and listening to this show. And is that it? I think that's it, right? That'll be it. So check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Do a search for The First Run. Scroll, scroll, scroll. Eventually you'll find us. Head on over to Apple Podcasts. It'll help you. Head on over to Apple Podcasts to review the show. It'll help other people find it as well. That's it. Head over to thefirstrun.com. You can find our report card where all the scores we've given the films, as well as links to all the shows. That's on there as well. You can find the TF archive for all the shows. Oh, I haven't updated the archive in a long time, now that I think about it. Oh, I got to do that. The report card's entirely up to date, Matt. The archive stops at 537. Oh, crap. Wow. I just gave myself another project.
Wow. All right. Well, don't kill yourself, Chris.
Yeah, maybe I'll do like 10 a week or something like that. We'll pop them in there.
Fair enough.
And that's it. So we're going to go ahead then, take an extended break. We will see you all soon. Take care. Thank you for 700 episodes. We love you very much.
I kick ass for the Lord.